Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
It's the My First Gig Podcast, whoa, sharing stories of first gigs and shows, comedians sharing their memories, the fun and entertaining, exciting and crazy, with Dwayne Dugan as your host. It's the My First Gig Podcast, here we go.
Hello and welcome to another edition of the My First Gig podcast. My name is Dwayne Dugan and here we are. Welcome one, welcome all. Come on in, sit down. Thank you for joining me today. Delighted to welcome the wonderful Stuart Goldsmith to the show. Obviously, if you're a comedy fan listening to a comedy podcast, you'll know exactly who Stuart Goldsmith is. Host of the Comedians Comedian podcast. But here in this episode, he swaps the host mic for the guest mic. Could probably just have used the same mics, to be honest. Don't want to let you in behind the curtain of what it's like to be a world famous podcaster. But look, yeah, whether I'm the host or not, I can use either mic. That's the talent that I have, and one that Stuart possesses also. Interestingly enough about this podcast, this was the very first in the My First Gig series. So a little history here. I just wanted to do a podcast for a while. I thought every comedian in the world has their own podcast. Why not get my own? And I was sitting down with some great guests, recorded several podcasts, but they were just, as I think I said in previous episodes, I was just kind of boring myself. I didn't really enjoy it too much with the bog standard questions. So when it came time to record with Stuart, I came up with the My First Gig concept. Listening back to edit, I was worried that it wouldn't sound anything like the rest of the podcast. It'd be completely out of sync, that, you know, I'd finally found my groove in later episodes. But it turns out the exact same questions I used in my most recent interview, I also used in this. Now, I'm not sure if that means that I hit the ground running or if I've been absolutely just numb since and haven't added a single new question or developed it at all. I guess the one positive is when I do ask him his first memory of comedy, I don't do that little thing that I say now going, you can interpret it any way you like, which I hate. If you haven't noticed, hate it with me now. But this was great. This was recorded in Whelan's a couple of years back. Whelan's in Dublin. Stuart was over performing his Edinburgh Fringe sold-out show, Compared to What. But before I give you the episode, what's going on, guys? I'm actually recording this in the daytime for once. It's nice. I'm looking outside being like, oh, wow. That's what the sky looks like. It's a nice clear day here in Dublin. We had snow yesterday, which was a bit mental because I'm recording this in... I'm looking at my laptop now to see what date it is. I'm not sure if it's April or February. It's only February. That's not that bad. I've been telling people it's mad to have snow in April. That just sounds like a general comment overall and not an actual evaluation of what's going on in the world at the minute. I had a strange realization the other day. I don't want to bring the tone of the podcast down, but I was on a bus listening to music, had my headphones in, had them up real loud, and look, basically, I let out a fart, right? And I was like, happy days. That's out of me now. What a banging tune. And I just saw, like, the bus wasn't that packed. I was kind of down the back. And I saw a man up ahead of me kind of look over and look back at me. And I was like, how did he hear that? I've got my headphones in. And then realized that while my music would be delivered to my headphones, any sounds coming out of my body would not. And it took that man looking at me to realise, oh wait, I've clearly been doing this for years. And like, anytime I'm on a bus, I guess I just assumed it all goes through my headphones. So if you're ever on a bus and you just hear someone let it rip, just not caring for anybody around them, and you look around and see them and they're just there, big smile on their face, minding their own business, just being like, hey, yeah, 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 hey, yeah, yeah. I said, hey, what's going on? Then that's me. You may have noticed that this little interaction was just a subtle ploy to get my singing demo out there. Voice of an angel. Arse of a rhinoceros. That's me. There's a footpath. So out in front of my house, there's like just a big green. But there's one footpath that separates the middle of the green. And I'll be honest with you, I'm a bit worried now. I'm no longer kind of interested in the podcast. There's seagulls all around the place, right? And they're all over the place. But there's just one seagull walking right down the middle of the footpath. And it's a bendy footpath too. And he's actually just following it. And I don't know if that's common, but nobody else is doing it. And it's just him. And it feels like he means business and he's coming for something. I'm expecting him to kick down the door any second now. So if you hear a bit of commotion, blame the seagulls. I was chatting to a friend the other day, and this will be an Irish thing, I thought. But maybe there's equivalents elsewhere. When I was a kid, there was this old man who used to come into our estate in a van that played music, not too dissimilar to an ice cream van, except this was called the Good News Caravan. And it was a man driving a caravan which had a door on it, and inside, rather than your usual caravan kind of equipment, it was just benches. And he would invite you into the caravan, providing you were, I think, under the age of 16, sit you down and talk to you about Jesus. And he'd lock the doors, and we're all like there at like 12 years old. We don't want to learn about Jesus, so we're just making fun of him. Not making fun of him like and his beliefs or anything, but just the man was clearly mental. And if we spoke out, what he would do is he would take out this massive camera and take photos of you and wouldn't let you out. And only in telling this to a friend, I kind of was like, hold on a second. Something's not right here. That doesn't sound normal. And I went Googling this, and there's no official record of the Good News Caravan, but there is a lot of forums, especially forums based in Cork in Ireland, of people just being like, hold on, who remembers this? That wasn't okay. And his van was like in bits as well. Like it was covered in, it looked like it had been attacked a few times, which that also makes me suspicious. You know, you wouldn't go around just attacking a priest's car. Is this my subconscious? Did I fall asleep one day and then join a forum under a load of different aliases and post this just to convince me that I'm not going mad? Did you have anything similar to that? What's the weirdest thing that used to come to your town? That's a broad enough question. Let me know. Now, I'm not just going to keep telling you things that I realised, because we'll be here for a long time. I'm not a very smart man. We'll keep this going. We'll go listen to a podcast now. Do you want to listen to a podcast? Yeah, let's listen to a podcast. Right, I'll see you guys on the other side. But for now, sit back, relax, and listen to My First Gig with Stuart Goldsmith.
I suppose at one point they thought a croissant was a posh bread roll, didn't they? So it's all just... My friend Pete's got a very funny observation about the fact that whatever new technology turns up, the first people to use it, everyone thinks they're twats. And then 5 years later, everyone's... Do you remember... You're too young to remember when mobile phones first happened. Jesus, that's painful. But yeah, when everyone had mobile phones, I was like, oh my God, as if you need a phone in your pocket.
I just remember wanting one. I was never allowed one.
Yeah.
And then I got one. My dad's company was sponsored by a new phone provider here that weren't active for 18 months after I got the phone. So I had a phone just for Snake for a year and a half.
No way. Yeah. Did you get good at Snake?
I probably didn't. No, I can't really remember. So I guess that means no. We're here in Whelan's. Stuart, thanks for joining us. Welcome to Dublin.
Thank you for having me in such wonderfully red leather surroundings. Just to paint a picture for the listener. I mean, it's some of it is red and some of it is ox blood. I was told off for not knowing the colour oxblood. That one over there is oxblood, that dark red, but this is just red.
I'm learning new things now. Pan de chocolat and oxblood.
Yeah, I hope the pan de chocolat stuff's not staying in.
We'll see.
Goldsmith's great pan de chocolat at the airport routine.
Where have you come from?
I've come from doing a weekend at the Glasgow Stand.
Oh, great. How did that go?
Really good fun, because I'm touring at the moment, doing my own show, and it's only my second tour, I feel reinvigorated by having a new thing to do that isn't simply going out and doing circuit gigs.
Sure.
So I'm back at the Glasgow Stand in a couple of weeks in order to do my tour show. So that put like more meaning behind me being there. I was like, I've got to win these people over. And after my set, I want to go out and fly the hell out of them and do the hustle and all that kind of stuff. And there is a large part of my personality that is sort of almost like an illegal street trader knocking out DVDs out the back of a suitcase or something. So I'm always excited by the idea of, you know, I want to smash the gig, and when I'm on stage, I want to mention the show, and afterwards, I want to go around flying people, and that's like a fun way to do gigs.
This is your first time bringing a show to Dublin, is it?
Yes, it is. I've performed here before. I've done the International. I've done the Laughter Lounge several times, several weekends. I love it. I've got lots of very fond memories of Dublin. I think, for me, Dublin is really foreign and really exciting, like because I sort of speak the language, or one of them. I don't feel like an alien here, but everything in it, it just seems to be like everything in this town is an oxblood sofa with incredible history that someone died on, or someone, do you know what I mean? Or there's a bit of Oscar Wilde somewhere, or there's some public art I haven't seen, or a pub that was mentioned in a Sandman comic I read 20 years ago. So I love it, absolutely love it.
Well, this pub, in fact, was featured in the movie P.S. I Love You. I don't know if that's your fan of that.
I have not seen that one.
I haven't either, no, but that's how we said it.
Is that the one? That's not the... No, because it's set in Paris. I was thinking of from Paris with Love. Do you know that one? John Travolta and Jonathan Rhys-Meyers. I haven't even seen the movie, but it contains the world's best tagline, which is there. It's like terrorism in Paris, right? And it says, two agents, one city, no merci. Come on, that's incredible. I'm never going to see the film because there's no way the film could live up to that unbelievable tagline.
That's not bad. Do you have a tagline for your show tonight? Or what would it be?
That's a good question. It's called Compared to What? I will now fall flat if I try and come up with a quickie one. It's about compromise and about compromising in order to be happy. So some sort of tortured pun on I'll compromise you the world. Yeah, you can't do that, can you? I don't know. Comedy, compromise, communism. I don't know. That was not great, and your sound man is getting up and walking away. That's how well that went.
You brought the show to the Fringe last year. So this is at this stage, I guess. So you're doing previews and stuff, I'm guessing, maybe a year ago, sometime closer
than that.
Obviously then the full Fringe run, and now revisiting it for the tour.
Yes.
How would a show like this be different, revisiting it like months later?
Well, mostly because all of my stuff is very autobiographical. So this show, the plot of this show is I get engaged and I have a baby, and consequently I'm forced to move away from the city that I love and forced to live in the countryside. And forced in inverted commas on both occasions. No, on one of those two occasions. So the events happened longer ago. So that's quite a weird aspect of it. I'm kind of revisiting stuff. So what I do is I do the hour in the first half of the show. Most venues, I've got an interval now on this tour. So I'll do, rather than, I think the common thing is that most comics will do 40 minutes of crowd work and new stuff, then an interval, then the show. I'm doing it the other way around because my new stuff is all about, chronologically, the next stuff is about having a one-year-old, you know, so I can't do it first. So, but I've actually turned that into something quite positive, which is that I do the show, that's the hour, bang. Then there's an interval, and then I do, and I sort of prime people pre-interview. I go, there you go, you've had the show. If you want to come back, and giving them the power, lets them all decide to come back. So if you want to come back, it's going to be a load of wonky new stuff off notes, which I workshop. I do the stuff, and then I talk about the stuff and sort of involve the audience about it. And then a Q&A about my own podcast, and, you know, if there's enough pod fans there to make that worthwhile.
Let's go right back to the start. What would your first memory of comedy be, if you know?
Well, I remember very, and weirdly, I've heard someone else say this. I don't think I've stolen their memory. I think this was also my memory. The first joke I remember hearing in the playground was, I don't drink, I don't smoke, and I don't swear. Oh, bollocks, I've left my fags in the pub, right? I know, it's a perfect little schoolyard joke, you know. So I remember thinking that was really funny. I don't know if I attributed any significance to that moment. When comedy was first a thing that I noticed in my life, was Lenny Henry, who I used to watch on TV, and I hated school, and I'd go in the next day, and like the only good bit about my school day would be repeating the sketches that I'd seen last night on the TV, where I, a small white bloke from Leamington Spa, would attempt to reprise the voices, accents, and sketches of Lenny Henry's incredible, you know, his amazing different. Are you familiar with Lenny Henry?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, of course. So, well, you didn't know Pan of Chocolat, so I was like, come on, man. that I remember repeating those sketches for the enjoyment of my friends. And I definitely remember, it wasn't Lenny Henry, but there was another show that I saw that I didn't think was that funny, but I went in and did the sketches anyway. I think actually I liked it, and I went in and repeated all the sketches as much as I could remember. And there were my friends, there was a guy called Richard who said that he had watched that and hadn't enjoyed it the previous night, and then he thought it was funnier when I did it. And I definitely remember me thinking, oh, like, I'm quite good at this somehow.
Yeah, you said there you would repeat them for the enjoyment of your friends, but I'm guessing you enjoyed, I guess, getting the reactions and the laughs in the even in the playground.
Yeah, yeah. It's really difficult. My memory of school is not great. I definitely also, at the weekends, I used to do like a young people's drama group thing from the age of about 11. And I was definitely like one of the funny kids in the class, not like the class clown, but one of the, that sounds a terrible thing to say about yourself, doesn't it? I think I was quite funny.
Yeah.
But I would mostly be funny by, I don't know what I was going to say there. I don't remember being a great creatively funny person. Like, I wouldn't come in and do a funny sketch that was original. I was sort of, I'd make fun of things people had just said.
Sure, yeah.
Not in a bullying way, but in a kind of a, you know, that was, I was better in a kind of chatting.
No, I get that. Yeah, that makes sense.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
So at what point did you start discovering, I guess, live comedy? Was it before you performed or started performing, or was it whilst performing?
Well, because I came into comedy having been a street performer, so I discovered, and one of the weird things about doing street shows is that most people do street shows because they've seen someone else do a street show. Whereas me and my mate Noel did a double act, and we just sort of invented it. We were like, we learned the secret of how to walk on broken glass. I could fire juggle. He could fire breathe. We're age 16, and we went, let's just, if we did this in the street, we could do it, and then people might give us money. So we sort of invented the concept for ourselves.
Sure.
So we went out and did a bunch of those things. And then I ended up, after I went to circus school for a year, and then I would go to the Edinburgh Festival and do street shows up there with my mate. And whilst I was at Edinburgh, I remember seeing a show. And if anyone listens to this and knows or recognise anyone to do with this, I haven't been able to find anything about it on Google, but there was a show called 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea in a Fish Tank. And I must have seen that in 1990. God knows. What would I have been? I'd have been 16. So I'd have been, like 93, 94, something like that was my first Edinburgh. And I remember just watching two idiots in the back room of a pub doing a crazy sketch show and just thinking, these are like, I'm in the room with them. Do you know what I mean? Where it was more like on telly or Monty Python or whatever. This was like, you just get up and do it. This is amazing. So that really made me laugh. And then and I remember, because I've just been speaking to Harry Hill. I've just been emailing Harry Hill, who isn't going to be on the podcast, but turned me down in a very, very polite way. And I remembered, whilst emailing back and forth with him, that I had gone up to him that year in the courtyard of the Pleasance Theatre in Edinburgh and said, it was such a lovely thing. I said to him, he was chatting to Tim Vine, and I said, oh, hello, Harry, I'm a really big fan of yours. And I was like 16 years old and all starstruck. And he signed an autograph for me saying, dear Stu, glad to finally meet you, Harry. And which is just such a lovely, charming joke. It's a beautiful thing to do. So I must have been a fan of his at the time. So I guess I was watching whatever that kind of era was, like very early 90s. You know, I remember Newman and Badil and the Mary Whitehouse Experience on telly and Lee and Herring. I remember listening to Fist of Fun on the radio. So yeah, lots of that kind of stuff.
At what point did you transition then from being a street performer into stand-up?
My transition took place around, it must be about 12 years ago. I did So You Think You're Funny in 2005. And I remember being with the street performers in Covent Garden, where we'd meet every morning for breakfast, and we'd work out who did which show at what time. You'd do like a lottery. And then we'd all go to this particular cafe around the corner. And I remember saying to a guy called Paddy Bramwells, who was a street performer and a stand-up, and I was like, oh my God, he's both things. I always wanted to be a stand-up. I was too scared. I was like, I think I'm going to have to, I've got to do stand-up. And so he showed me a copy of Time Out, which is now, I think it still exists, but it's free, or it's smaller, or it doesn't have a comedy section, or all three of those things. But it used to be, this was in like ring for a gig. There were no email addresses in the gigs. You'd have to ring a human. And I was just, what do I do? And he said, look through here. Anything that's got acts, interested acts, colon, phone number, ring up one of those and tell him you've got 5 minutes. And I was like, but I haven't got 5 minutes. And no, but you tell them you do. And then, that was kind of the beginning of trying to get myself booked.
So who did you call?
I called, well, weirdly, this has only just made me think of this. I've got a very specific gig in my mind that was my first gig. But then I think I went away for a year because I got an acting job, and I'd done one, and then I can't remember which way round it was. There was another one I did. So I'll tell you quickly the other one, and then I'll go back to what I think was my proper first one. The other one, and I think it was must have been second, like a year later, was an open mic night. And I just thought, oh, open mic, great. And I went along, and it was all guitarists. It was in Manchester at the Thirsty Scholar. And it was all guitarists. And I still had enough kind of moxie at the time to go, oh, yeah, I'll do a bit. Yeah. And they said, how long have you got? And I went, 15. So I went and did 15 minutes. And it went quite well. I think that must have been my second one, but it was such a big gap. So the first one was the 99 Club, which is now an unbelievable empire in London, which runs like, I don't know, 8 or 13 gigs a week, something like that. This guy, James Woronetsky, runs it. And he was doing a character at the time called James DeChapeau. He was comparing, it was him in a hat. And
That's just the character.
That was the character. It was him in a hat, and he had a coat. And I remember he had a really brilliant joke, which I don't remember. I remember the format of it rather than the words, but it was a thing whereby he did something that kind of implicated the audience. They shouted something, and then he got a dictaphone out of his pocket, and he'd been recording it, and then that was a payoff somehow. And then he got another dictaphone out of his other pocket, and he'd been recording that bit as well. And I remember thinking, that is a really good joke. But he was comparing. Ava Vidal was headlining. I don't remember anyone else on the bill, but it was at the Blue Posts in Kingly Street in Soho.
If you'd never written a stand-up set before, how'd you approach that?
Good question. I must have been making notes for ages. And the advice I give everyone now when they email me on account of my podcast and say, what should I do? I'm thinking of starting. I always say to people, book yourself a gig, and it'll be months from now. It'll be 3 to 6 months from now if you're lucky. And then just try not to think about it. And then the week before, you'll go, oh, God, and you'll have to write jokes. I'm sure I did some version of that. I was booked, and I remember a couple of notebooks that I had. I remember a bit or an idea for a bit. I don't remember my opening joke. I've got a very clear, as someone who has a very bad memory, I tend to have quite a good memory for jokes, but I remember very vividly, I remember looking down at my hand and seeing it trembling on stage because I was so scared and so full of adrenaline. And I did 5 minutes, and it went obviously well enough that I didn't bring the house down. I maybe got one or two laughs, but at the time I was a functioning street performer who was being paid to make people laugh. You know, I was doing street shows and a couple of hundred people would go, "Hey," and cheer and give me money. So I never thought, what is this? I can't do this. I thought, oh, I walked off thinking, this is my thing. Yes, finally, I know what I am. I haven't known until now. Street performing is such a weird, you know, what am I? Am I a clown? Am I a circus guy? I don't know. I'm not really neither of those things. I didn't know what I wanted. I thought I wanted to be an actor. Then I was an actor and I went, ugh, I don't want this. So I remember a huge sense of relief and like, yes, finally, this is my thing. But it hadn't gone especially well. But I had been through a sort of 10-year or more process of be cheerfully rubbish at a thing, but excited about it, get better at it, keep going, keep turning up, die on your ass, get better, crack it, then put in loads and loads of practice and then be a full-time professional at it. I'd been through that journey once already. So when I did a half-decent first comedy gig, I was busy thinking, right, I just got to do 500 of these and that'll be great.
When you came off stage, you said you'd found what your thing, I guess.
Yeah.
But like, how was the come down that night? What did you do when you came off stage?
I can't remember. I mean, it's a long time ago. The main memory I have of that night is as I left, I walked down the stairs and, yeah, I didn't stay to the end of the gig, so I was probably already cocky. but Ava Vidal was closing, a British act who I guess is still going. I don't know if she's touring, but she's a very strong act. And as she was, I'd heard her name because I'd been pouring through all the time out. So I was like, oh, she's proper. She's headlining, you know, probably for whatever it was, 40 quid or 60 quid. Those, yeah. But I remember she said, was that really your first gig? I got a lot of that because I had lots of confidence from being a street performer.
Yeah.
A lot of people would go, was that, you're not new. I did one gig in Dan Atkinson's club in York. And I did like a sort of opening. It's probably the first time I ever did a 20 or something like that. And afterwards, I remember him walking on stage and going, well, we've all been lied to. There's no way he's new. Because I had a lot of, you know, I could think on the fly and I had stagecraft and stuff like that. But I remember that very first gig, I remember passing Ava on the stairs and she said, is that really your first gig? And I don't mean to be self-aggrandizing. I'm not like, because I was amazing. I just had some basic tools that probably helped me be a paid compere sooner than most. But I remember her saying, is that really your first gig? And I said, yeah. And she said, oh, you should stick at this. You've got a good look. Which I thought was ridiculous. I don't even know. Part of me, like, I get where she's coming from. It's like damning with faint praise. It's like, yeah, you're not funny, but you know, who cares? That's how it could be interpreted. But also, I don't think I have got a very useful look for comedy. I think comedy is much, you know, like the greatest comics all look a bit weird, don't they? They look a bit strange or like out of place. Or
I didn't want to mention it, but
I look bland as anything. Do you know what I mean? I just look like I'm cannibalizing one of my own jokes here, but I look like your brother's friend. Do you know what I mean? I just look like some guy. I used to have a VW Polo saloon, right? It's quite a weird car, a Polo saloon, and it just looked like a car. Like you couldn't describe it. It looked like the sort of car that would be in the background of a computer game. Do you know what I mean? Like, we haven't just put a sort of car shape there. Doesn't nothing
sure,
to
yeah.
And I've always felt like that's what I look like. I don't think that is a good look for comedy. So I don't know what she saw in that or what she meant by it. But maybe she was trying to say, you go, girl. Maybe she was trying to go, good for you, but in a way that didn't commit her to saying I'd been funny. In case, possibly thinking about it now, in case I'd done that terrible open spot thing of being complimented by a comedian with a recognizable name and then putting that on all of your promo and stuff,
sure,
you know,
yeah.
Slightly amusing Arthur Smith or what, do you know what I mean, whatever it is.
Good look.
yeah a good look. Yeah, she's sort of insulated herself against that, I think.
No, that makes sense, the whole having the prior experience. I guess the reason we talk about first gig here is that every night here at our show in Wins, we have someone doing their first gig.
Oh, nice. What, are there enough comics that you can do that? How often does your gig run?
It's every week. It's the hardest slot to book.
Yes, of course. It has to be. You're really genuine about it. It has to be their first show.
Oh, someone's like, oh, I did 3 minutes. I was like, it's not your first gig.
Great. Good for you. What a great idea.
What we notice is, especially when trying to find these slots and actors who've like written a funny play or something like that, and then people go, that's not their first gig. And I think it's because, I guess, they know how to perform on a stage, so they're only thinking about the jokes. Whereas I think someone who's never been on a stage before,
oh, it's an insane,
thinks about being on a stage,
yeah,
and probably lets the jokes slip a bit.
I think of that in terms of the way people in the audience kind of go, "Oh, you're picking on me. Oh, I don't want to get picked on." And 9 times out of 10, I think comedians are like, "I didn't pick on her. I just asked her where she was from."
Yeah,
but that's picking on someone, because from the point of view of someone who hasn't had a room full of people look at them while they're expected to speak, Do you know what I mean? That's like, that people are terrified of that.
Oh, of course, yeah.
So it's like, it's almost like we're fishing with, I went scuba diving once at night. And if you point your torch at the little, you see a little fish, you point your torch at it, a bigger fish eats it because the bigger fish have learnt to fish by torchlight.
Okay.
Right, so you pointed out, you know, they said don't point your torch at fish because you'll just get them eaten.
Sure.
So I suppose it's something similar. If you're in the audience, it's like someone puts the spotlight on you, they're like, fish. Oh, we get eaten. You know, my confidence gets eaten by the room.
You mentioned that you remember one bit, maybe not the bit, but at least the format or the structure.
Yes.
Test that.
Oh, I don't want to. It's awful. I remember, I think the bit was, I would say, it was about sex and death. I said, those are the only two subjects. They're the only two important things, aren't they? Sex and death. That's the only two things anyone cares about. It's terrible. I'm already doing it better, just rhythm. I'm setting it up better than I'm sure I did. Sex and death. Sex, death. So it's sex, 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 sex. Death. That's like a life. Unless you're a vampire. In which case it's sex, death, sex. Or unless you're a mayfly. In which case it's sex, death. And I just did lots of versions of sex and death. That's kind of all I remember from it. And I think I had a very early bit, which, no, I don't know if it was in that. God, it was another kind of, I was sort of pretty sex obsessed, as new acts often are. I think I did a bit about the British sign language for the male and female orgasm. I can't swear that was in my first ever gig, but it's certainly the first bit I remember having a closer, like a closer for an unpaid 5 minute spot, you know, but it was good enough to close on. It had a very reliable punchline, and then I managed to quite quickly put in two other very reliable jokes on the way, which were about the, which is terrible for a podcast because it's visual. It's I'll tell you what, you we'll mic you and your sound man. I'll do it visually.
Here you go,
and
Richard.
Then we'll hear whether you laugh or not. Okay, so first, this is the British sign language for the female orgasm.
Okay, yeah. I guess.
That's all I wanted. That was just an actual laugh. It's a reliable bit. My point is, two people in a non-gig situation, that's kind of funny, right? The difference between a very sort of expressive, joyous movement that's very sensual for the female one, and then the male one is basically you make a sort of pointy gun finger with your hand and you do a sort of a splash with the other hand coming out of it.
It looked like an awkward, like, 70s dance from a guy who doesn't want to dance at a wedding, kind of.
Lovely. There we go. That's a fresh angle, should I ever decide to revisit that 12-year-old piece of material.
You said it was a year till your second gig. You got a job in between, was it?
Yes, I got an acting job that was like a seven-month job in the Lake District.
Did you plan, I guess, going into it to do more than one, or was it a, we'll see how this goes?
Ah, good question. I think the main thing I remember is that I walked off and went, yes, I'm doing this. So if I hadn't planned before, I'm sure I'd have planned after. It's not like I started booking and went, right, I'm going to book 10 gigs. I just booked one. So yeah, I suppose I must have been trying it, but in trying it, I'm sure I went,
you got the bug.
This is it. Yeah. Well, that's it. I didn't feel like I'd got the bug. I felt like I'd finally revealed the bug. I felt like the bug was always there. I never knew what I wanted. I never felt settled in the world. You know, I did a little bit as a street performer. I went, oh my God, there's this whole secret world, a bunch of guys. It's like you're on a permanent heist with a bunch of superheroes. Everyone's got a secret identity. Everyone's got a weird name they use on the street and they don't exist on paper. And you can travel all over the world and you'll know someone in Tokyo and you'll know someone in Melbourne and Brisbane and whatever, you know. And there's such a tiny, tiny little circuit. And it's all pretty magical. And from the point of view of a kid from Leamington Spa, everyone's got crazy haircuts and facial tattoos and they walk around in their costumes. In Covent Garden, we would call those people buskerados. You know, you see them in comedy, people who kind of walk around in their persona. Right, people who live their persona 24/7, you know, like a young Brendan Burns, for example. Okay. We can imagine that. So at the time, I felt very much like, yes, I'm a street performer, that's what I do. But I think on some level, I was like, this can't last forever. Whereas when I did the first stand-up gig, I went, I'm home.
You know, we mentioned the podcast, you close to 200 guests, you probably recorded more than 200. All the advice that, you know, you kind of heard from the stories that they've told, the advice that you've learned yourself, if you can go back to that first time gig, Stuart Goldsmith, and give him some advice, what would you say to him?
It's a good question. I think the thing that I have most, like, like a year ago, as much as a year ago, I'd have said something like, just enjoy yourself. You know, you're going to die one day. Just enjoy yourself. Just go, just do this. And I think I probably was, so I don't know if that's great advice. What I would say now to alter the whole course of my stand-up, which I would never do because I have seen any short stories about time travel. But if I decided to do that, then what I would say is, don't try to be this idea that you have of what a comedian is. Just go on stage and talk honestly about the things that upset and confuse and bewilder and anger you. Because what I think now in retrospect, at the time, I was trying to contrive things that annoyed me. Because someone was like, oh, you should talk about things that annoy you. I was like, all right. Things, you know, Eddie Izzard, I think I'd heard Eddie Izzard quoted saying, and a job of a stand-up comedian is to tell the audience as honestly as possible what a terrible person you are. Which I think he's right, if that is correctly attributed to him. I think he's right, but I think I misinterpreted what he meant. I took it too literally. So I would try to think of things that I could be annoyed by. That's exactly my point. I used to try, and I think a lot of people I see that do, particularly new people, you try to think of things that you can be annoyed by. And actually what I do now is I talk about the real actual things in my life that I can't put down. The things that I want, my preoccupations, the things I wander around thinking about and being annoyed by. And it's a weird focusing that I've learned. You have to sort of recognize what those are. Like it tried to explain to me how you move the fingers on your left hand. You can't explain it, right? Because you just do it. It's like if you had a tail, you'd just move your tail, right? It would just be a thing. And I think you only get it from experience, but recognizing what is a true thing that annoys you or a true thing that you think something about and what is a thing that you've contrived to think something about, that comes with time.
That was your first gig?
That was me.
Sounds good.
Thanks, man.
And that's another one in the books. Thank you to Stuart Goldsmith for joining me. An insanely fun chat. Stuart just, you know, obviously he's a natural at talking in a podcast environment. So like even listening back to that, he'd make everything work. You know, there was an excitement for everything. There was an encouragement and it really made for a fun conversation. Hopefully you're able to tell that. And it just shows how good Stuart is at what he does. So that was technically my first gig podcast that I recorded. Hope you enjoyed it. If my intro or my outro sounds a little different, I've lost my recording equipment because I'm a smart boy and I'm recording it on a slightly different one, but it's still kind of good. I'll do a bit of editing and hopefully you won't notice. And I should have just edited this out if it does sound okay, but I won't because I want you to know that I put effort into this. So then you go, wow, aren't we a lucky bunch? We should really give Dwayne a bit of credit. Maybe on some sort of social media device like Instagram or Twitter or Facebook. How would we do that though? You'd probably just go to @myfirstgigpod and give a follow, send a message. Maybe say, wow, I love listening to Stuart Goldsmith on his podcast, but holy gosh darn whiz, he was great with Dwayne today. My God, the rambles are dreadful. Maybe I should stick to doing these at nighttime. Now, I won't say I'm nocturnal because I'm not nocturnal, but I've always been a bit like, oh, I'll just work until 7 o'clock in the morning and then go to sleep. So maybe my brain actually is just better at nighttime. Maybe doing this in the day wasn't the best idea, but hopefully you can still understand me. Guys, if you've had fun, head on over to @myfirstgigpod and give it a follow. Give it a share. Tell people about it. Still early days yet. Some great past episodes in the can. So if you haven't, go back and listen to them now. If I haven't bored you to death and you'd like to hear more from me, then go follow me @DwayneDugan. If you're in Dublin, follow Cherry Comedy. We mentioned in the podcast there that Cherry Comedy every single week hosts a brand new act in the years that followed since we recorded that. That has now effectively changed. But if you are a brand new comedian and you would like to give it a go and you are based in Dublin or willing to travel, then give me a shout. You know, we might bring it back just for you. Cherry Comedy every single Monday night at Whelan's in Dublin. Or if you're not in Dublin, just go to your local comedy club, support the comedians that you hear on here, or support the ones that you haven't yet heard and help them get to the level where we'll one day talk to them about how they got to where they were. Wow. What does that sentence mean? I don't know. Guys, I'm going to leave it there. Tune in to My First Gig Pod on social media to find out next week's guest before anybody else. And until then, love, peace, and chicken grease. I promise I'll never say that again. Bye.
It's the My First Gig Podcast.